Last time, we were discussing that knowledge is the most pure thing here. There is nothing purer than knowledge, because it is knowledge that ultimately removes the possibility of doing anything that we call bad or sinful. It is this division of subject-object, that I am so and so, and thus it creates so many wants in my life about the world. I want so many things, and these wants give rise to various bad things that a person does in life. If there are no desires or wants, then there will be no possibility of committing a sinful action. And these wants are removed when you know that you are perfect, when you are the all-pervading Self. Then what can you want? Where is the scope for any desire? So, therefore, this knowledge is considered the most purifying agent. When you wash your mind with the knowledge, then it becomes pure. And that is the soap to wash the mind. For washing clothes, you have different soap. But for washing the mind, this knowledge is the best soap. The knowledge that God is alone real. We can see when this knowledge, to the extent it dawns in our mind, and we become pure to that extent. So therefore, even for living an ethical and moral life, one must acquire this knowledge. It is often said, and to some extent there is truth in it, that one need not be religious or spiritual to lead a morally good life. Yes, we see in fact many, many people who do not have any formal faith in some church or in some God. They are quite moral people. And the reverse also seems to be true, that many who are church goers or temple goers or seemingly religious people, they are not as truthful or as ethically or morally sound in their life. So it may appear that it is not necessary to be spiritual or religious to have a moral life. But if we go a little deeper, those who practice in their life some moral disciplines, they may not be believing some God sitting somewhere governing the affairs of the world, but they take some moral standards and respect them. That itself is like respecting a God. Their God's name is different, their God's form is different, but that becomes God for them. If you look into what actually is all morality based upon, as Swami Vivekananda has put it very beautifully, that it is not I but you that is the source of all morality. You first, then I. And that is how we consider a moral behavior, that there is something that both of us want. Then a morally sound person would say, okay, you first, you go ahead, have it. Not like that person who said to his wife, when a tiger faced them, he pushed his wife saying that, ladies first. Not that. But when it is, something is to be there, gotten by many people, then this morally sound person, the one who observes moral law, thinks that, well, let me get others, let others get their share first, I will go later. It is that in every respect, not I, but you, that is this something that sustains the ethics and moral behavior of people. Now, where does this behavior spring up from? There is, of course, obviously speaking, no evolutionary reason for that. It goes exactly against the Darwinian idea of competition, struggle for the fittest. Let me go first. I don't care whether you have or you don't have. That is the idea that we have in the biological world, that I first, I don't care whether you get or not. But the moral behavior is based on a different law, that it is not I, but you. Doesn't matter if I perish, but I will give you first. Such people are considered the most ethical and moral people in the world. And the Buddhas and Jesus, Buddhas and Christ and such people who were ready to sacrifice their life for the good of the humanity, they are the greatest examples of ethical life. Where does it spring from? That yes, I and you, there is no such difference. Let me sacrifice the interest of this little self for the universe or for somebody else. So, where does this come from? It comes from a different sphere, not from this sphere of, you know, that I have to rule the world or I have to be superior to other. Doesn't matter if I kill other or destroy others. That doesn't give rise to this morality. The morality comes from this idea of that self-surrender. And that is the outcome of this knowledge. In some other, there are various forms that the knowledge can come in our life. But not I. This ego is to be surrendered or sacrificed to get the highest knowledge. This ego is product of ignorance, and therefore, even in our day-to-day life, we see the person who is very egotistic is not considered the ethically the best person. The one who has less ego is considered more moral, more ethical. So, this reducing the ego is the sign of this knowledge, that to that extent the oneness starts manifesting in life. It is not very easy to feel or understand, but when one looks a little deeper and takes a peep that how the lessening of ego in us brings more knowledge of this oneness, and that makes our life spontaneously moral. Not that all religious people, who's religious in the sense, seemingly religious people who go to temples or mosques or churches, they don't go there always for the religious purpose. There are so many different reasons for going there. It is not a question of how much you show that you are religious. It is the question of how much you try to imbibe these principles in life. And that becomes then the source of a purer, more ethical, and therefore a life that becomes satisfying from that point of view too. Then there are other means which were told earlier, now they are reaffirmed, that how this knowledge is to be obtained. Earlier it was told that tadviddhi pranipatena, attained that knowledge through prostrations, surrendering yourself, and then through proper questioning and service. Now told are some other auxiliary means which are, we discussed to some extent last time. It is said, Shraddhavan labhate jnanam tatparas sanyatendriyah jnanam labdhva param shantim achirena adhigachyati. That one must have Shraddha. Shastrasya guru vakyasya satya buddhi avadharanam. That is called Shraddha by Shankaracharya. And he also said that that is what leads to the realization of the truth, the what is really the total existence that one realizes through this faith in what the teacher has told, what the guru has told, what the scriptures have said. Take hold of that as true and march forward. And then that becomes your experience soon enough. Soon enough. So that is to say that achirena. That as you get that knowledge, you can experience the peace of that attainment. The more knowledge comes in your life, the more peace also comes in your life. So, the ultimate knowledge, ultimate peace. So, there are, the progress can be experienced. Not that you have to wait till you get to the highest. Yes, when you get to the highest to experience the highest peace, but even relatively, if you get a little bit of knowledge, and to that extent, you will experience peace in life. So, it is told that this knowledge comes to the person who has this faith. With this faith, this person starts traveling. If no faith, no travel is possible. It is, Columbus couldn't have found this place had he not had the faith that there is a land there. There is, the India can be found by going this way. So he took up the ship and started that, yes. If he had no faith that it is, who knows, there is only ocean, there is nothing else, then he wouldn't have started. That faith, yes, somewhere I will get to that land. The earth is round has been discovered. That those were the days when this knowledge was very new. You know, it was not still, many people didn't believe. And unfortunately, even now there are people who believe that the earth is flat. There is a society, that flat earth society. So imagine during the Columbus days, the time when Copernicus and Galileo, they were subjected to inquisition was not too long ago. But yet, this discovery was making rounds that the earth is round. And people had gone to India, but by a different route. There was no proper sea route available then. The Suez Canal was not there, so that roundabout route. And so it was thought that if we could find, you know, since the earth is round, if we, this side there is lot of sea, we can go on the, instead of going to east, if we go towards west, ultimately we will come to the east by going towards west, since the earth is round. And towards the west, the ocean seems to be almost having no boundary. We have not explored that much, so let us go there and find out. So with that faith, he moves ahead. The faith, and of course there is the adventurous spirit. A spiritual aspirant has to have adventurous spirit. We all like adventure. People like adventure. Especially it is the sign of youth. Young people like adventure. When one becomes older, then security feelings become more. Is it not contradictory? Those who are younger should think more about security and not taking chances, because they have long life to live. As you grow older, actually the life is almost all gone. You know, a little bit is left. Still, as you grow old, you start worrying more about security. Children, come on, they are more adventurous. So, one sign of adventure, that youth is adventurous spirit. So one must be adventurous in spiritual life. Adventure is required. There is a nice book by Swami Yatishwarananda. It is titled, Adventures in Religious Life. Because it requires adventurous spirit to go beyond what is known. When you are moving within what is known, what happens? You feel security. Yes, I know this. Even if these people are not good, known devils are better than unknown. So you remain confined to this only known. I don't want to venture beyond. So what happens? You never learn more. Our learning gets limited by not adventuring. So that adventurous spirit makes you explore. What is not known, you explore that. And so that requires this faith. Yes, I will go ahead. I don't know there what is happening, but let me go further. There must be a way. So you move ahead with that faith, that yes, scriptures have told, yes, there is such a place. Let me try that. So that spirit makes us acquire knowledge. Without that, without having adventurous spirit, true spiritual life is not possible. There has to be that spirit to plunge. And doesn't matter, anyway I have to die one day. Let me make best use of this life by trying to explore the unknowns. What is the fun only living in these confines of the senses? That is more bigger adventure. The biggest adventure is that when you say that let me explore what is in Africa and what is there on the South Pole and North Pole and all those regions, let me go there. That is of course adventure, bigger adventure. Let me cross this sphere of Earth's attraction and go to space, and this gravitation crossed, and then going beyond this Earth's gravitation in the space, bigger adventure, yes. Further adventure is, yes, going beyond the sphere of our these sense organs. They bring us only limited knowledge. Whatever is their range, only that much we know. All our knowledge is limited by our five sense organs. And that is the limit in which science moves. All physical science moves within strictly that limit. You may say that, do we not use telescope to see farther? But who sees the telescope? You see it through the eye, that is the ultimate viewer. You use the eye to see the telescope. You really do not see something that eye can absolutely not see. It is only you increase the capacity of eye, that's all. But basically, you have the sense of vision, the sense of the sound, a sense of touch, sense of smell, sense of taste. Beyond that, you don't have a means of knowledge. And science moves, as Arthur Eddington, in his Arthur Eddington was a great scientist of last century. And he has written a nice book, Philosophy of Physical Science. And there he has mentioned this, that our attempt is only to find out what is in this world of five senses. Whatever cannot be caught by five senses, science cannot know. So, an adventurous person wanting to know beyond that has to be adventurous, a big adventure. Let me step out of this limit of this five senses and this limited intellect. This nervous system of ours has its limitations. It can give only that much knowledge. It cannot do better than that, limited. But one can step beyond that. That is a big adventure. This limited senses and nervous system can bring us only the knowledge of multiplicity, not the knowledge of unity. And therefore, one has to take that adventurous step. And that is what one does in meditation, and takes that adventurous step of going beyond the range of the sense organs and nervous system. It is, this is, but this happens with Shraddha. Yes. You have the faith that the reality beyond is there. And scriptures have spoken of that. Many sages have realized that truth. So let me also do that. Moreover, the benefits are immense. In this world we explore that what we seek, like we all seek peace. And whatever our big achievements are, we don't get peace by those achievements. We may get a Nobel Prize. Even if we get Nobel Peace Prize, we may not be at peace, you see. You have the example right here in United States, how much the poor fellow has to run about, you know. Got the Nobel Peace Prize, all right. But does that mean that he comes to peace with himself? Maybe he may bring peace amongst the warring nations. But becoming peaceful oneself is not that simple. One has to have that adventurous nature to go beyond this our earthly experience, which has to be, by its very nature, by the very contradictions involved in it, it has to be turbulent. There is no way out of it here. But doesn't mean there is no way out. There is way, but you have to show the courage to step beyond. So it is said that paraha, the next thing you have to have the shraddha, the faith, and also that should lead you to a controlled life, sanyatendriyaha, that the life an ignorant person's life is propitiating the sense organs, different senses, bring enjoyment to all those different senses, becomes the life of an ignorant person. You want to see the beautiful form, you want to hear the beautiful sound. And then what is beautiful, what is not beautiful, again keeps on changing all the time. So, eat nice tasting food and have a very soothing touch. So, all that we keep on seeking, but a person who is seeking knowledge and knows that this is not the way. So, starts the controlling the propensity of the senses towards these things. So, this is a big change in attitude. A spiritual aspirant makes a big change in life. That the life of running after sense enjoyment is changed to control, puts a brake on it, that if you know that you are going in wrong direction, you miss the turn and are going in the wrong direction, then you cannot immediately turn the steering wheel and try to go in the reverse direction, you will just crash. First you have to press the brake, stop going in the wrong direction. So, then you can turn it. So, that is sanyatendriyaha, that controlling the organs, this faith, zeal and self-control, that is the translation given here, that tatparaha, and sanyatendriyaha. And with this knowledge coming up, the peace is an automatic outcome. Peace, because this knowledge automatically will make you peaceful. Absolutely, this is true. I have seen it with so many people. To the extent this knowledge starts shining forth, the life starts becoming really peaceful, irrespective of the situation around you. The situation around you, you don't have control over that situation. Whether the world will have wars or not, you don't have control over. You may keep on grinding your teeth, why this country has attacked that country. Can you control it? You have no control over what the situation is going to be there. You cannot control over, you know, why the tenant living above this apartment keeps on having such noisy parties. It disturbs my peace. It is difficult to control that person. It is difficult to control the behavior of your, say, friends or spouse or your close relations, your family members too. That why are they not peaceful? Why they are always complaining? Why do they not let me live peacefully? You have absolutely no control on any of these things. But still, irrespective of whatever the situation is outside, you can maintain your peace of mind through this knowledge. This is a kind of psycho-cybernetics, you know. Cybernetics, There was a book also on psychocybernetics, a long time old book, and there is the society, Psycho-Cybernetic Society. But Vedantic psychocybernetic is this, that whatever is outside, you cannot control the outside, but environment which you can be controlled. Now, you cannot control that there should be never that very cold temperatures in Providence. Well, living in Providence means you know that you get many times in single digit temperatures. You will be freezing, impossible to live in that temperature. So what do? You don't go to, you know, screaming and shouting about to God to change that thing. No, it is the temperature outside you can't change. But you can have the heating system and all that in your home. You can keep your room warm, or you can put sweaters on your person. That is what you can do. You can control thereby the temperatures of your situation. You can be at the desired temperature, but you cannot change the whole world. That beautiful story that the king was very perturbed at, why my feet are getting soiled as soon as I go out. And he ordered everybody, all people, that broom all the places in the whole street should be all dustless, spotless, everywhere. It should not, a speck of dust should be there. Now, how can you control the dust in the entire country? It is not possible. And if there is no dust, how can you have farming and that the earth is necessary, dust is necessary? So you cannot get rid of the dust from the whole world. So that a man came and said, why not you put something on your feet? And that is where you can control. The problem was dust getting on your feet. Your feet, you'd want to be clean. So put something on your feet rather than putting on the whole universe. So if that is the focus, then there is some hope. So it is told that if you go in this manner, yes, your life will be peaceful, and it can be seen that one attains peace in life, does not get perturbed. Many challenges come in life. This person meets them with equanimity and peace. It doesn't grumble, don't keep on blaming the whole world about it. It does not write letters to the editor for, you know, all that. Does what is necessary and remains peaceful. So this is what is told in Bhagavad Gita. You will attain peace by these means. And now comes that what are the impediments in this. When guidance is given, the guidance should also cover what are the possible impediments in the journey. There may be like when we were trekking in Himalayas, there are those things, warning, you know, that yes, there may be that landslide and this stones will be falling, so you have to look and go cautiously. So these things are told even on the streets, here on the roads, there are signs of deer when you are driving. A deer or some such thing may come, so be cautious about that. It is all these signs are important too. So therefore now Lord says that what are the dangers on this road? They are told because they are there. they come in our life. In fact, they are sometimes very big. And the first thing is that we go back again and again to that ignorance. We gravitate towards that. And we read scriptures, learn all this, feel nice about it, but then do not stick to it and gravitate back to the ignorant life. So, ajna, ajnascha ashraddhadhanascha samshayatma vinashyati nayam lokosti na paro na sukham samshayatmanah. This is the 40th verse. He who is ignorant, wanting in faith and of a doubting mind is ruined. For the doubting man there is neither this nor the other world nor happiness. In the original Sanskrit there is no gender specific thing. Here in translation they have to use he or she, so they have used he. But it is applicable to both. Ajnyascha, ashraddhadhanascha, ignorant. Now everybody is ignorant, but what is meant here by that ignorant means the one who does not try to keep this these attacks of ignorance out. Ignorance, as you are moving towards knowledge, till you are established in it, there will be the attacks of ignorance. You will feel, yes, nice, it is very good, but next moment may feel, no, that is all right, but I will not stick to it. You read something else and get into that. So, knowledge is covered by that, and when that happens, the progress gets impeded. It is, naturally it is, because knowledge makes you go ahead in that direction, ignorance or lack of knowledge will automatically make the progress stop. Then, ashraddhadhanascha, wanting in faith or shraddha, that person also will have similar difficulty, that the faith is important. If there is no faith, that lack of faith becomes a stopping, that you, it makes you stop. And there is that Sri Ramakrishna used to tell a nice story, a man was told he had to cross over the sea. So he was told, okay, you take this box, and in that box I have given some special thing. As you don't open the box, keep it, hold it in your hand, and you will be able to walk on the water. And this man started walking on the water. He was walking fine. After going about half the distance, thought that, what is there? Let me see, open the box and find out what is there. So, he opened the box and found a small paper on which the name of Rama was written. Then he thought, hey, what is this? This is such a simple thing. Why, how can this make me walk on the water? And the fellow drowned, you know. Because that faith was gone. It is, first he thought there must be something very special in it. So that is making, let me see, open, and then faith is gone. Then the fellow was drowned. So faith is very important. The more our difference in human beings, as Swami Vivekananda says, is determined by how much Shraddha or this faith we have in ourselves or in God. That he says, what is the history of this world? And the history of the world is the life story of a few persons who had faith in themselves. They are the world history. You don't read in the books of the history the names or what they did. You won't find the name of Yogatmananda or some such in the history book. It is, even after I die, but it is, you won't find that, because it is not that everybody's name is written. Those who had faith in themselves, they did many, many great things that history could record. So, that is, faith in oneself makes one do all those great things. So one has to have that faith, faith in God, and it is same as faith in oneself. And then the biggest thing is told here, samshayatma, a fellow of doubting nature. And that doubting nature fellow is specially targeted here, because others, their drawbacks are not that serious. But a person who has a doubting nature, and this has to be understood clearly, is it wrong to have doubts? In fact, it is, unless we have doubts, we won't have questions. And unless we have questions, we won't learn. Doubts are good, in fact. Yes, doubts are not discouraged. Doubts are good. What is discouraged is the doubting nature. Means this person does not go to get the doubts resolved, wants to keep the doubts all the time, likes the doubts so much that always has only the doubts. Such person will never be able to progress. This is called samshayatma. The very soul of that person is doubt. Always doubting. You may have doubt and you ask and then get the doubt resolved. You may think and get the doubt resolved. The focus should be resolving the doubt. But this person just goes on getting doubt and doubt and doubt. The nature has become just full of doubting all the time. So will not be able to make an inch of progress. That it is that mentality becomes always a negative mentality. Always the thoughts will never be positive. Always that what will happen if this is the case, what will happen? Who knows what is the case, what will happen? No, suppose I start marching and there is earthquake. Well, how can you say about that? Can you give me a guarantee that there will be no earthquake tomorrow? Who can give you that guarantee? It is, you have to have that understanding and move. People spend just time in doubting, because this becomes a psychological problem, that the idea of that doubt sticks inside so much continuously that cannot get rid of it. This doubt is very much encouraged in Bhagavad Gita, as we have seen earlier, that you must ask questions. You get the doubt and clarify the doubt and move forward. But this person doesn't want solutions at all. This person only wants doubts. And so the whole soul is filled with doubt. This person has no hopes. As said, this person, na ayam lokosti na paro, na sukham samshayatmanah. This person becomes samshayatmana. That is, for the doubting, this translation is, it is difficult to translate it well. That it is not just a doubting person. This person is doubting, is a very mild translation. The whole soul is only doubting. That is the nature of that person. That just as a person breathes, this person doubts, you know. It is to that extent that is meant. Just you cannot stop breathing. You die if you stop breathing. This person stops living if this person doesn't doubt. Doubt is the very nature of this person. Always doubt. And this tendency is in us too. And we must guard against this tendency. All this is told not to hurl criticism against anybody. This is for our improvement. That this nature continuously something, what is that, then what is that, then that negative attitude is not good for spiritual life. Yes, you have genuine questions, ask those or think about them, read scriptures, get them resolved, and once they are gone, you move forward. Don't go on buying doubts, you know, buy solutions, don't buy doubts. So, this person looks for doubts, you know, spends all fortune in buying more and more complex and complexer doubts in life. So, that person has no hope, Lord says, and therefore, the next two verses are about inspiration. That therefore don't fall prey to such things. Take the sword of yoga. Yoga sanyastam karmanam jnana sanchinna samshayam atmavantam na karmani na nibadhanti dhananjaya tasmad ajnana sambhutam hristam jnana sinatmanah Chitvainam samshayam yogam atishto tishth bharata. But who has renounced the fruits of actions through yoga, whose doubts have been destroyed by the knowledge, and who is self-possessed, O Dhananjaya Arjuna, is not bound by actions. Therefore, O descendant of Bharata, destroying this doubt born of ignorance of the self and seated in the heart with this sword of knowledge, take to yoga and arise. This doubt is to be cut by this sword of knowledge. We shall discuss these two verses in details next Friday. Any questions? Let us conclude with the closing prayer. Not asking me questions there, you know. Well, I say, if you ask here, then others will also get benefit of it. Oh, you have a question?
You get rid of all the doubt.
I got rid of all the doubts. Excellent. Thank you. Oh, Sam has a question. Oh, yeah, that is a question quite difficult to answer. We know these words. It is difficult to say who exactly is moral from a universal standard. That one can say that it is the one who is less selfish is more moral. I think that would be a more applicable definition. In Vedanta, in deciding somebody's morality, the intentions have precedence over actions. Intentions are more important. The actions are not unimportant, but they are to be judged. Their moral value is to be judged according to the intentions. So, the one who has the intentions of selflessness and service to others, that person is more moral than the other. So that is the one definition that I can tell you. But if you try to put the definitions in some strict forms, then you will see that those definitions don't work at all. We had at our once in the Brown that RLA, we have a Religious Life Associate meeting, and there was one person was giving talk about that this is right and this is not right. Then I asked him, well, how do you say that this is something is right from this angle and something, but that very thing won't be right from the other angle? Then he said, well, you can't be be relative in all that, then everything becomes all difficult to define. But then, said, how to decide? Do you have a particular standard to say that this is right and this is not right? And he said, we have to fix some standards. We have to fix some standards. He said, in your culture it may be so that the right and wrong can be seen by from various angles. But for my culture, right is right, wrong is wrong. But fellow, what is right and what is, can you tell me? And everybody started kind of pouncing on him, that how do you decide, tell him, tell us that it is true that from, if you see a chicken being attacked by a wolf, and eating the chicken. Who is how do you decide the morality of any of them? If you want to save the chicken, then you deprive the wolf of its food. If you want to, the reverse. If you want to let the chicken be eaten by the wolf, then you feel, well, the chicken is killed by that. So whom do you think that what is moral and not moral? So by intentions alone one can decide that if you have the intention of hurting others, then it is immoral. If you have the intention of helping others, then it is moral. Actually, if somebody is hurt or helped is not always in your hands. And even though you decide that you are helping somebody, that somebody may be helped. But in the process, some others will not be helped, rather hurt. So to decide just by action that somebody is like that doctor, our mobile dispensary doctors, and we were told one day that we thought that we are doing wonderful work helping so many people get their medications otherwise, and the people were also praising our work, wow, you do such nice work, and we were patting on our backs also if they were not doing it. One rather old man just brought us down on the earth. Said, yes, you give medicines, you treat people. Look, but before your this dispensary van started coming to our village, there were not so many diseases here. And that was correct, really. It is. If we look more deeply, it is not really wrong. because it makes people less immune. You know, the more medications you give, they become correspondingly less immune, and so they get more, the more diseases come there. Now, whether the action was morally right or not can be judged only by the intentions, not by the exact outcome. Moreover, that doctor who used to practice in the village, he complained that, look, I used to get some patients at least and get some money. Now you give medicines for free, so nobody comes to me. So you are depriving me. So for him, we were not doing exactly what is moral. So it is difficult to decide by only the results. The intentions are more important. Yes?
That's about moral. What about ethical?
These words are more or less interchangeable. That ethics has to do more with justice. That's all, yeah. Yes, please.
To use an extreme example, then, if Osama bin Laden thought he was helping people, then he would be moral. And then if George Bush thought he was helping people, then he would be moral. Is that true?
If they are really doing that, yeah, that caveat is there, you know. Yeah, that caveat I have to put. If they are thinking that they are helping, then yes, that's true. But then the question is, it is that did they consider the impact of their actions? If you have really the good intentions, and out of good intentions you are doing some actions, it is also good for you, rather morally binding on you, to see the impact of your actions too. It is, did they see that? I doubt that it is. Firstly, I have doubts about the intentions also.
Right.
But suppose given that they had good intentions, then I am saying this. I don't think that they really had most sanguine of the intentions.
Well, maybe there are some people who need to doubt more. You think if they have a fanatical point of view, they don't doubt at all, and they just think I'm right and everybody else is wrong.
Well, that is true, that to get that doubt is not, see what is told here is, I tried to explain that getting doubt is not bad, that is important. And that yes, to know the truth, to get doubt is good. But doubting should not become so much into you as like breathing becomes your nature. Just to have doubts for the sake of doubt, that is not encouraged. Yes, Mike, what you wanted to say?
I'm reading a very interesting book. It's called Racing to Armageddon. And it's all about the Bible. And it's about how people take the Bible literally. Also in the book mentions George W. Bush. And he believes God put it in the White House.
Well,
divinely put there.
Yeah, because he was put there, and everything happens by the wish of God.
Yes.
So that is true. Okay, and let us conclude with this.